to order. It is Tuesday, May 3rd. Can you believe it's already May 3rd? I can't believe that. And we have only work sessions scheduled today, members. And I think what I'd like to do is just go right down the line. So I'm going to start off by opening a work session on House Bill 2026. And Jim, if you would give us a little update on this, please, and where we are and where we left it.
Yes, sir. House Bill 2026, we last heard it on February 10th. We have since had a dash run amendment. The amendment clarifies that standards should be based on commonly recognized industry standards. There is no subsequent referral.
Okay.
We just need to adopt the dash one amendments and we can move it.
Okay, thank you. As I remember, it was Representative Butler and also the Secretary of State's office that was interested in having this language put in there, and that language is fine with you, Representative?
Mr. Chair, the dash one amendment under date of February 7th does acknowledge the audits for the internal audit purposes would be consistent with those which are normally incorporated and commonly recognized in the industry standards practices. And I do want to acknowledge the work of the folks on the work group, including Debbie Ferguson from the Standard Insurance Company and George Dunford with the Department of Administrative Services, as well as Dallas Wyand from the Legislative Fiscal Office, who is also a certified public accountant. I believe that the standards, the bill then provides a framework to establish a consistent high standards for internal auditing as to fiscal matters and the integrity of Oregon's public agencies. And with that, Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2026. Is there discussion? Is there are there objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2026 as dash one amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2026 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any questions? Seeing none, call the roll, please.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Wizard?
Yes.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Butler?
Yes. Aye. House Bill 2026, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Butler, would you like to carry it?
I'd be delighted.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler will be the carrier. Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2026. I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 2166. Jim, would you give us a little update on this bill, please?
Yes, sir.
And also address the amendments that are before.
House Bill 2166, we last heard this on January 27th. We have a dash one amendment. It's a housekeeping bill that brings municipal audit program statutes current with changes in professional accounting and standards and language currently in use. It removes the language related to the Secretary of State assisting local governments in developing, revising, and installing accounting systems because this option is not practical and has never been used. Lastly, it removes the requirement for CPA firms to file copies of audit contracts with the Secretary of State. It does not have a subsequent referral.
Okay, thank you, Jim. We have before us the dash one amendments, and what I need to find out is, first of all, have the folks from the profession seen the dash one amendments by any chance? Do you know?
Yes,
Kim.
Don't you represent the profession?
I don't represent the profession, Mr. Chair. I think it would be appropriate to perhaps have Rob Douglas from the OSCPA come forward and make any representation.
Okay. Good morning. You might be wondering what the PIG is for. It's for acronyms, or if you just want to make a contribution, you can. And the funds go towards the Northwest Medical Team Tsunami Relief. So if you just want to make a contribution, please feel free to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. We did go over the dash one amendments just before the committee met. As I understand it, it just does away with the requirement that these contracts be filed with the Secretary of State. Nothing more. We'd be supportive of those dash one amendments.
Okay. Now, there is one thing in the dash one amendment. Are you familiar with the dash one amendments, Representative Butler?
Yes, I have seen the Dashmore amendments, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do we know who presented these?
These were at the request of Representative Butler, and I believe he worked with Carol Reeves.
Carol Reeves, yes, from the Department of the Board of Accountancy.
Oh, okay. Because I'm just in on page one of the dash fives, or excuse me, of the dash one section, starting with section five. It says, well, first of all, going up, it says in line 34 on page two to delete roster required by ORS 297670, and then I got to get to pick. Oh, whoops, wrong place. And then on section 5, it says, it takes out the language that says accountants means and indicates all accountants whose names are included in the roster prepared and maintained by the board, Oregon Board of Accountancy as required in 297.670. And then it has new language that says certified public accountants who hold a permit to engage in the practice of public accountancy, certified public accountants authorized to practice public accountancy, and public accountants who hold a permit to engage in the practice.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes, please.
Just by way of refreshment to this particular issue, Oregon has a unique to Oregon only municipal license, and the language that you've just reviewed removes that roster of municipal accountants from the state of Oregon. There's, let's see, there's 310 presently registered municipal accountants in the state of Oregon, which have a fee, biannual fee charged of $100 to stay on that roster. This has long rubbed the American Institutes of Certified Public Accountants as well as public accountants worldwide. It protects a group of people, and it basically violates the first standard of field work, and that is that if you are not prepared to engage in the audit, if you haven't been technically prepared to, you shouldn't take on the audit. And the same is true with regard to municipal. In this regard, and having worked with Carol Reeves, from the Board of Accountancy, she assures me that they will be able to, by rule, make certain that they feel comfortable that the folks that are involved in the certified public accountants and public accountants who hold permits to engage in public accounting, both in the state of Oregon and worldwide, that are going to be doing these, will still be required to get the necessary training, which incidentally is a nationwide as well as a worldwide responsibility.
Okay.
And that there was no loss of integrity relative to the audits which will be performed on municipal corporations in the state of Oregon. There will be a loss of revenue of about $31,000 per biennium. They felt like that could be spread around amongst the other 7,500 to 7,800 accountants, nearly 8,000 accountants, so that the fact that they don't have to maintain it but still have to check the hours of those who are coming forward to say that they are current on their municipal audit continuing professional education. That really needs to be folded together with all other kinds of continuing professional education, including the technical professional education dealing with taxes and audits, as well as the ethics exam or the ethics requirements that are required every 4 years for certified public accountants and public accountants to continue practice.
Is that the rulemaking then, authority, Representative, what's on page 4 at line 11, where it says the board may require each holder of a permit issued under ORS 673-150 who conducts municipal audits to participate in a continuing education program relating to governmental auditing?
Mr. Chair, yes. They still have the ability, and again, this is one of the many continuing education requirements that, again, these are not necessarily unique to Oregon. These would be required for anyone who is going to conduct an audit in the state of Oregon. Again, we need to look more globally and holistically at the overall audit profession. When a firm bids on a dozen audits in the state of Oregon, and the firm happens to practice all over the West Coast, when we bring those folks in, they'll be subject to Oregon taxation when they come and work in Oregon, but they'll also then continue to have the ability to bring auditors in, and we will, in like manner, be able to send our auditors out to work in other states without this pall hanging over us that we're a unique to the United States and unique to the world, that we've got a one and only municipal license.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the State Society would oppose the abolition of the municipal roster. We think there do need to be standards in statute. Mr. Ankerson, CPA, is with me. He could describe what those standards would be if, in fact, the committee wants to continue down this course.
Perry, why don't you come on up, please? Is it very seldom, very seldom that we have, or very often, that we have sort of a disagreement between maybe the association and the board?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe we have a disagreement with the board.
Okay.
What happened here was
for the record, Perry,
Perry Ankerson, practicing Tiger, living like Oswego. Mr. Chair, we were rather surprised by these amendments to a rather routine housekeeping bill for the Secretary of State that requested that a type of protection for the public be removed. Oregon Representative Butler is correct that Oregon does have a unique requirement. Many other states have what's called government auditing standards. Those are issued by the United States, Comptroller General of the United States, that they require all of their auditors to have. Primarily, government auditing standards would require the same amount of continuing education that is required right now of all government auditors, probably quite a few more than are in the current situation. What's happened right now is the municipal auditor license requires 40 hours of continuing education before you get your license, essentially proving to the Board of Accountancy to their satisfaction that you know enough about the particular area of municipal auditing. Continuing education includes 24 specific hours every 2 years in government subjects to be sure you keep up with that, and that's along with the other 80 hours every 2 years that's required by the Board of Accountancy to keep your license. What the restriction is then is that only individuals who have, one, proven that they've taken enough background courses and have kept up their continuing education, one individual, the individual who signs the report in each firm, must keep up this license. All the rest of the folks for Oregon rules do not have to keep up any continuing education on that. We do not allow out-of-state CPAs that don't have a municipal license holder in Oregon to audit Oregon municipal corporations, because there's a body of information called the Minimum Standards for Audits of Oregon Municipal Corporations that's out there that has some special things that we need to do in Oregon and need to look at and need to audit in Oregon. And getting on the roster assures Oregon governments and the people that are being protected by them that these individuals have those qualifications and have learned something about that particular area. We would like to suggest that if there's a particular pressing need for doing this, number one, the stakeholders haven't had any notice. We just received these -1 amendments, which really changed the thing just a few days ago. The cities, the counties, the special districts haven't had a chance to even take a look at them. Almost all of us thought this was a housekeeping bill for the Secretary of State, as opposed to abolishing a type of thing, a type of licensing. So, be more than pleased to answer any questions you have about that licensing situation. The American Institute of CPAs, to the best of my knowledge, Representative Butler has not said anything particular about our particular municipal
license.
Several
years, that's correct. They have not. Mr. Chair, I'm the author of this particular issue. I'm going to stand by it. I know that the AICPA has taken exception in the past for the fact that Oregon was a standalone license. If you think that you're protecting the public by additional licensing requirements in the state of Oregon, again, Mr. Ankerson's testimony is that there's no less CPE requirements, continuing professional education, under this bill, that they still have to take the same amount. What it does is this provides employment protection for those who have the examination, and for those other folks who are grandfathered in. That's like grandfathering in everybody who used to fly a helicopter when you then start a helicopter license and say that everyone that started off with it gets it automatically. I'm very anxious about this continuing issue of having a, and I don't think that there's really any kind of discussion that is contention that Oregon has bad auditors or over good auditors. The question is whether or not you want to have 310 people, who some of whom are still grandfathered in, who did not take any special license, any special examination, but have continued on with the same kinds of courses, continuing their professional education, including 24 hours in a special municipal area. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a continuation of something that is an old-school arrangement, which is needed for years and years and years to be resolved and worked out. Oregon should not be a one-of-a-kind state in the nation with this unique audit license. And I think that you'll find, Mr. Ankerson, that the AICPA has had a rub against this going back many, many years, and while they haven't made any pronouncement recently that states should not have standalone licenses, I think when I first started in the profession and realized that they handed out these grandfather licenses to everyone that was then in the profession, whether or not they'd done municipal audits, and correct me if I'm wrong, then at that particular point, then what happens is that Oregon then began to separate itself from the first field standard of auditing, and that is you've got to be competent to start off what you're doing or else you're in violation. And again, I don't want to give anyone the impression that in Oregon we've got a bunch of incompetent auditors, because we've got some very competent auditors. But to say that the cities and the counties and the other stakeholders are going to lose something, actually I look at it a little bit differently. I say, hey, wait a minute, maybe along the borders of the state of Oregon with other states, we'll be able to attract some auditors who have the special requirements, the special continuing professional education requirements, to come in and perform these audits. And then to say that this is for those who examine those special things that we have to examine in the state of Oregon. I appreciate that Oregon's laws may be different than those of Washington, Idaho, California, and Nevada, the surrounding states. But by and large, every state has its own requirements, and my position is that as long as I meet the field standards, whether or not I go out and pay the $100 for the license, and take the new examination that would be required of me, or the other, whatever work, I don't even know. Don't have any interest in finding out, because I don't want one of these licenses. But I think what it does is, if you really honestly went out to your cities and counties and school districts, and honestly told them what we are doing by protecting these 310 licensees, versus the fact that they can't go to Idaho and get a school board district audit on the 8C school district in Ontario, because of this unique issue, then what you're doing is you're running up the cost to my schools and my local municipalities by saying we are unique in Oregon because we've got a license. Now, if I'm wrong, unload on me, because I just did that to you. And then ask me how I feel about this.
I think I know Representative Butler. Thank you. There's substantially no one in that's been grandfathered into this from the 70s when I got my license, I believe 77 or 78. There used to be an examination. That was changed a number of years ago. There's now a requirement for continuing education before you have your first municipal audit, before you propose in your first municipal audit. I don't think there's hardly anyone who's grandfathered into the 310 that are on the municipal roster. First standard of field work is exactly as you said, requires competence of auditors. And what Oregon has done, really, is to put that into rule as to what competence means. In Oregon now, for the municipal roster, competence means you've taken at least 40 hours of continuing education before you start in your municipal audit business for one, at least one individual in a firm, and that you have continuing education. Competence under the fieldwork standards are such that the individual pretty much gets to figure out whether they're competent or not. So if I want to go out and do a municipal audit, and have taken a municipal auditing course or a municipal course in at Portland State University 10 years ago, I may feel that I'm competent to do that. And I might indeed be, but nobody else gets to deal with that. What we would suggest as an alternative is that to do what several other states do. And Representative Butler, you indicated that you didn't think that having something unique in Oregon was a good idea. I can understand that. Many other states have adopted the government auditing standards for Oregon, for municipal audits. About 10% or so, I don't know the exact number, of the audits in Oregon, certainly of all the bigger governments and many of the school districts, are done under government auditing standards because they have a lot of federal money involved in them. And because of the Federal Single Audit Act, that's done. If we would substitute simply requiring in statute government auditing standards for the municipal license, that would require, because the federal government thinks that competency involves continuing education, the government auditing standards, the major issue there is that pretty much everybody on the audit gets 80 hours of continuing education every 2 years, and within that, 24 hours of government-related work. And it could be a combination of government and not-for-profit if you happen to do those works. So we would suggest that as an alternative. If not, all that Oregon is doing with their municipal auditor statute is simply putting a benchmark to say, what is competence? You can't actually judge competence. In fact, the board figured that out a long time ago when they abolished the test. They tried to test for competence, and they realized that that really wasn't doing it necessarily. Okay, get some education in you so that you'll have competence. So that's where the standard is right now.
Okay, thank you. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Butler has answered most of my questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond, I appreciate Mr. Ankerson's response, and if the board needs to go ahead and continue to do something beyond what is listed on page 4 under subsection 4 of section 9 in this particular piece of legislation, that is, the board, for any CPA or PA who conducts these municipal audits, they must participate in the continuing education requirement program relating to governmental auditing. And the board has the ability to do that. And that, so far as I know, is the language that other states, and if they need to arrive at some federal competency, then already the board is requiring that of those folks who hold the licenses that participate in these. If we need to strengthen up that language, I need to know what that is. But I just feel like this is the first step in trying to get Oregon back to where our licenses are fully reciprocal with every other state and every other nation.
I'm going to ask Carol if she would come on up. It's okay if she sits between you gentlemen,
sure,
isn't it?
Indeed.
Okay. I mean, you guys won't start, like, elbowing each other. If you do, I'm charging you. You have to pay the pig.
Anyway, thank you.
And a couple of questions that, and Carol, I don't know if you have prepared comments or not, but a couple of questions that I'd like to just kind of toss out there, and then you guys can, the three of you can figure out how you want to answer them. But that is, number one is with regards to the municipal rules, and quite frankly, even the small governments have to follow those. As you know, it's already in Oregon local government budgeting law, so they have to follow those standards as far as audits are concerned. The other thing is that with regard to allowing the board to set this by rule, which is found on page 4, doesn't that sort of answer some of the things, Mr. Ankerson, that you were talking about? But let me go to Carol before you answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Carol Reeves, and I'm the administrator for the Board of Accountancy. I first need to set the record straight. The Board of Accountancy has not even considered this amendment. This has come up in a time when we have not had a board meeting, so they are unaware of it, to my knowledge, or at least have not deliberated on it as a group. I have had discussions with Representative Butler and have agreed that we may be able to deal with it administratively in terms of revenue. The fiscal impact is not great, and the continuing education requirement that is already in place could continue to assure competency of those who are already licensed. Those are the discussions that we have had. And I think that the section that's in this bill regarding the Oregon Board of Accountancy's ability to set continuing education requirements for this particular function going forward is sufficient for the board to say that we adopt the governmental accounting standards, or auditing standards, excuse me, if that is what the board feels is an appropriate standard for competency in this matter. The standards require 80 hours every 2 years, which is the same number of continuing education hours that the board requires of its licensees, and of those, 24 must be in governmental auditing. I would suspect that this board would find the 24 hours in governmental auditing to be sufficient for a competency standard. But again, I'm not speaking for the board, as they've not had a chance to consider it.
So, so Carol, really, the board, this amendment then would give the board the ability to set the continuing education standards that are required for anyone that's going to do a municipal audit.
It would. And there are some ways we may be able to do this to meet the initial competency that Mr. Ankerson has discussed. I have thought about the possibility of requiring the 24-hour requirement to be met before one signs their first audit. So there's sort of an initial threshold there to show competency before it begins. And then the renewal periods every 2 years would be another, I can't say what amount, again, because that's for the board to determine, but I'm guessing perhaps the 24-hour that's in the governmental auditing standards. But beyond that, I can't speak to how they would feel about the fullness of the bill.
Okay. May, Mr. Chair. Also, if the board did that, that's de facto doing the same thing we're doing without giving them the $100 revenue, I think. Wouldn't you say that?
You mean we continue to regulate them?
Continue to regulate
without having any revenue for it, true.
Yeah.
But we already review continuing education standards for every licensee within the licensee fee. Oh.
Mr. Chairman, my response to that would be you already examined for the ethics portion of the examination or the ethics portion of the continuing professional education, and this as long as you continued with your competency and your continuing education, again, what it does is it does away with the roster. And while I appreciate the fact that there are a few people that come forward and say, I think this is a really good thing, I'll be real frank with you. I think I would be remiss if I said I think everybody ought to have an opportunity to go fly with a pilot who got grandfathered in. And the fact that you can attest here today that hardly nobody has a grandfathered in license anymore is just the fact that we've outlived them. And I'm looking at that and saying let's not put anyone at risk. Let's make sure that the issue, whether you took the examination or whether now you come forward and have the continuing professional education and the proven competency in the field, I still strongly believe that this is a cost driver. This is a cost driver because just like you've been on the front lines, I've been on the front lines. The difference is that I've been on the front lines in Ontario, Oregon, where I am competing with the state of Idaho, where I would like to invite over auditors from the state of Idaho who audit the state of Idaho and the school districts in the state of Idaho to be able to cut my audit fees by $1,000 or $1,500 a year. I can't do it because they say, we don't want to go take your hokey, you know, license exam, this is what it used to be, and we don't want to have to sign up for your municipal audit license roster. And in that regard, we had one senior gentleman across the border who had been grandfathered in, who folks were going to and saying, will you sign off on this because you're the fellow in Idaho that still has this old roster number. And at that particular point, I said, you know, if I ever get an opportunity to actually make a substantive change, it would be to this fact that we've got the one-of-a-kind, unique Oregon municipal roster, which says that this part is a separate group, 310. We're down to 310 individuals. Originally, it was everybody that had an accounting license in the state of Oregon. Everyone that was willing to do audits in the state of Oregon was given a grandfather license at that particular point, is my understanding. Carol, you're too young to understand or remember.
Well, excuse me, Representative Butler, anyone with a license has to have 24 hours of continuing education.
Not originally, year. Though. Not originally.
Well,
there wasn't even continuing professional education until I came and testified on continuing professional education back in 1972. We didn't have continuing professional education in the state of Oregon. So it wasn't until then that we even adopted continuing professional education. So I guess what I'm saying is I feel very passionately about the fact that I think this reduces the cost to my municipalities. And if you find one that wants to pay an extra $1,000 or $1,500, let me know, because we may be giving that school district or that city too much access to funds as it is.
Did we outlive the guy across the border?
He's still alive, but he's still but he no longer signs. He's blind, and so he can't sign this.
Can't sign him anymore. Okay, Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, I'm not sure I'm tracking this, but is it the case that right now to get on this roster, the only requirement is that you complete the 24 hours annually of continuing education dealing with government audits?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please.
Representative Rosenbaum. The board requires those who wish to be on the roster to complete 40 hours of continuing education in the area of municipal audits and governmental auditing. When those hours are completed and they're the approved hours, then they are approved on the roster. After that, they're required to complete 16 hours in governmental auditing each renewal period. So that's a...
Yeah.
I think. I don't do it, so I'm guessing. It's 16 hours, I think, it's about 8 hours a year in order to maintain their status on the municipal roster. Those are the current requirements.
And, Mr. Follow-up. If the language of this bill were approved, what would change about the way you do that certification?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, speaking independently, keeping in mind, because the board is the one who has authority to make these decisions, there would certainly be a continuing requirement for continuing education for renewal. It may remain at 16. Perhaps it would go up to 24 so that it is consistent with the governmental auditing standard requirements. It would seem logical to me that it might do that. And I am suggesting that there could also be a 24 requirement. It would be the standard renewal requirement, but if you've never conducted an audit before, if you've never been on the roster before, it's possible that we could require those folks to show us the 24 hours before they sign that audit. And that way we would have some assurance that they have achieved a certain amount of continuing education in governmental auditing before they're performing the audit.
So in other words, Carol, there's nothing in this language that would prevent the board from basically maintaining the roster and saying these are accountants with a license in Oregon who have met the qualifications necessary for government auditing purposes.
And Mr. Chair, while she's looking at that, just on page 3, both under Section 7 and under Section 8, it talks about previously where the accountant was on the roster doing the audits. Audits under this section shall be conducted by an accountant as defined under the ORS 297-405, and that's where they will have the continuing professional education as opposed to an extra $100 fee. And Carol, that was one thing that you left out of your scenario of the things that you do. After you've gone through the 40 hours and verified with the board what you've done, then you pay $100 and then you get on this roster.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a $100 licensing fee per biennium.
Right.
And there are about 310 licensee or municipal auditors, as Representative Butler says, so the fiscal impact, the revenue impact, is not of a great magnitude to the board. Mr. Chair, in response to your question, the board really doesn't have the authority to continue the roster. I believe this amendment removes it entirely, and the roster is created under the authority of ORS 297, which is the law that relates to the division of audits. So that's within their purview of authority, I believe. But if the amendment were to go in place, were to become effective, it removes the definition of the rostered accountants and replaces it with these three categories on page 1, and those are in line 13, A, B, and C, certified public accountants who are licensed in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
certified public accountants who had authority to practice in Oregon under the substantial equivalency provisions, and that is a special authority that is allotted to folks in other states who are practicing in our state, and they pay for that privilege. And third, it is certain public accountants, those who have passed the audit section of the exam and therefore are qualified to perform audits. Public accountants in Oregon are sort of a mixed lot. The requirements have changed over the years, and currently public accountants are not required to take the audit section of the exam, and so it would not be appropriate. And likewise, they are restricted from performing audits. And so it is not appropriate for that licensee, those who have obtained the licensee in recent years, to perform municipal audits. So Section C here would restrict those folks from performing municipal audits. But the roster would go away. The roster is really the Secretary of State's authority, and that would go away.
I'm kind of bothered a little bit, Perry, by one of your comments, and that was this. Then that was the sign off. So a company could potentially send a person out to do an audit that might not be qualified to do the audit, but as long as they had a municipal auditor in their office that was willing to sign off on it. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, ethically, there's something wrong with that. But there's not necessarily legally something wrong with it. And I would sort of akin that to, as an athletic trainer, me going to a neurosurgeon and saying, look, this is a pretty simple procedure you're doing, and if you'll sign off on it, I'll go ahead and do it for you, and then that way you can go do the more complicated case. This is just a little, nicking of to prevent, something wrong in the wrist. You could go do the big stuff.
The professional requirement is essentially that the individuals who conduct the audit be supervised appropriately, also as part of the auditing standards. And we all use staff that are less qualified, maybe than the top person in a firm, that sort of thing. And that's happened. What does happen in Oregon with the municipal roster is essentially one individual in a firm has to supervise the audit and must conduct, and that's the words in the minimum standards, conduct the audit personally to whatever extent they consider appropriate. And so it's a sort of interactive thing within the firm as to how much conducting happened. Years back when I was at Cooper and Lybrand, we had one very prominent municipal auditor who conducted all of the audits, but maybe 50 of them, signed off on 50 of them, but how much supervision can you give to each of the 50? But through the way the firm went, those individuals were in fact supervised by that particular municipal auditor. We don't have a particular problem with removing the municipal auditor roster if there's appropriate protection. We think government auditing standards, which has been adopted by a number of states, and we don't know how many other states. Phil Hopkins indicated he knew there were several, but I don't know how many there are. What that does, it would make Oregon rules compliant with federal rules in terms of auditing. It would actually increase the amount of continuing education needed for the collective audit team to do municipal audits. And there are specific rules, 24 hours every 2 years of continuing education, that are involved in those auditing standards. So if that were to be put in the statute, number one, I think the Board of Accountancy wouldn't have to track that. And that would be good. It would be tracked through peer review and through the federal government by exception. If you're going to take away the $31,000, which isn't that major an amount for the Board of Accountancy, you shouldn't ask them to track continuing education related to municipal audits anyway. Because I think they would have no hammer at all if somebody were to violate that. And we'd kind of have to think about that.
We would. That I hadn't thought about, the hammer. That's always good.
Well, I'm just wondering if with what you just said, and maybe with the discussion that we've had here this morning, does that at all change your position on the Dash 1 amendments from the standpoint that do you feel that there would be enough safeguards in here currently to protect what, you know, I mean, to make sure that municipal auditors, local government auditors, really do have the background.
Mr. Chair, can I ask you a question just a little bit different way?
Sure.
This revolves around the government accounting standards practicing and competency, as I see it. Carol and Perry and Rob, on page 4, paragraph 4 under section 9, the board may require each holder of a permit issued under the Oregon Revised Statute who conducts these municipal audits to participate in continuing education program related to governmental auditing. Does that give you a high enough sideboard so as to be able to require the numbers of hours for the numbers of accountants to jump the high bar for the GASB requirements, competency requirements?
Well, Representative Butler and Mr. Chair, actually, it says may. They don't have to do anything. They haven't been informed of this at all. The board hasn't discussed it. The board hasn't considered anything in terms of that. They may, and they may not.
So right, you now, think they might set a lower standard?
Certainly.
Oh.
They may not wish to deal with the complexity of trying to ferret out municipal auditors. And I can certainly see that. So why do we deal with that? Why don't we deal with auditors of banks? Why don't we deal with auditors of commercial companies that manufacture things? Why don't we have each standard in there? They haven't shown that indication over time.
I guess I would be a little bit bothered if that were the case, because then I would say the board is slouching on their responsibilities to protect the public. I'm not sure that any board wants to be accused of doing that, and any member of a board that would participate in something along those lines of not protecting the public, which is their primary purpose in life anyway as a board, then any member that would do that probably ought to be removed. Because the number one requirement, the number one thing that the Board of Accountancy should be doing is that as far as certified public accountants are concerned, is making sure that the public is protected from unscrupulous and illegal and unethical practices. And if they're too chicken to take up the issue, then I would have a real problem with that. Now, I'm sure that they probably take their responsibilities very seriously. So when the board goes back, and Carol, if you play this tape back for the board, I don't want them to think that I'm attacking them, because I'm not. I would be sure that they understand that that is one of their, that that is their primary responsibility. But that's the case with any board. I mean, whether it's the Board of Medical Examiners, the Board of Accountancy, the Board of cosmetology, the Board of Massage Therapists. I mean, you look at any of those where their primary responsibility is protection of the public. So I would think that they would, you know, they would look at this and say, okay, yes, we may, and quite frankly.
Mr. Chair, my only concern are twofold, actually two, that's may, and number two, that protecting the public is sort of a broad thing, and I'm not sure that it's only related to municipal audits. You know, there's audits of all sorts of other types of organizations that are out there. Your initial question is sort of refined, I guess, would be, is there enough protection there for the public in the bill as it exists? I think since there is no standard that would be in there for municipal audits, probably not. But if you'd want to substitute government auditing standards as a requirement to do government audits, as many states have done, that probably would. And we had an opportunity to kick this around in our committee at the Oregon Society of CPAs just this last week, and that was a consensus of the organization there.
Let me ask you this, Representative, and Carol. If we were to, in a legislative council, just gets real cranky if we do any kind of a conceptual amendment. But here's my question. On page 4, and so I'm not going to suggest that we do a conceptual amendment, colleagues, but rather that what we would do would be to bring this back on Thursday. But if we were on page 4, where it says, on line 11, where it says the board may require, what if we change that may to a shall? So that the board shall require each holder of a permit issued under ORS 673 who conducts municipal audits, under 297 to participate in a continuing education-related program. So that's one thing. And then is there somewhere else in the bill, and this would be for legislative council to find, that where we would insert language relevant to the government standards, government accounting standards board, the GASB requirements for municipal audit. Would that be, would that create a problem from your perspective, Representative?
Mr. Chair, first of all, the posting issue, unless we're posted right now for Thursday, we would not be able to take this bill up.
One of the things that we did is that we put agenda items not completed today may be carried over to Thursday, May 5th. We had put that on our agenda, so that takes care of the posting issue. So now the posting issue is not an issue.
Mr. Chair, if we sincerely felt that the board would not require permit holders who conduct municipal audits, and that's specific to the municipal audits, to participate in a continuing education program relating to government accounting as shall versus may, I'm hesitant to go and tell them what they shall do when they have done a pretty good job of taking good care of this industry in the past. However, if we needed to insert the language that we would move to the GASB level of continuing education in order to assure competency, I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Okay.
My concern is that we are maintaining a unique to Oregon roster at $100 a throw for those folks that want to have one per firm to sign off. Recognize what this does too for somebody who's only a one or two person firm. I mean,
I was with Coopers & Lybrand.
Coopers & Lybrand. Okay. When I was back in the olden days, it was Coopers & Lybrand, Ross Brothers in Montgomery, and a bunch of other folks. But you see, for a firm like that, you only have to have one for 100 accountants. In my firm, I got to have one for one accountant, or one for two accountants, or one for three accountants. So it gives another firm an inordinately control of the market, and ultimately a high opportunity to control the market. Now, for $100, folks say, "Well, that should go away." But I, Mr. Chair, I'm at the point where I'm not going to break my pick on this. I think I've had an opportunity to air my concerns. I think there's members of both the professional society and the board who have heard those concerns. And if we don't do something with regard to, I've sat here and thought who it was that told me that this was wrong and it was in violation of where the AICPA wanted us to go. As I recall, it was John Fowler, the guy that signed my certificate, who was the president of the board from Ontario, that told me at the time we shouldn't be doing this. And encouraged me to go out and take the examination because we've been doing these in California. And I said, I have absolutely no intention of going into the auditing field, and particularly in the municipal auditing field. I have other ways to gag myself without doing that first. So I guess my concern is that this still runs up the cost for those small audits and those small firms that are providing this, and it gives those of us on the border a very difficult time to keep their costs down when they send out for their city or county or other municipal audit with their school districts or ESDs. So I'm still very anxious, Mr. Chair. I'll be happy to work with Rob Douglas, Barry Ankerson, and the board to see what kind of language they would be amenable to. I got a sneaking suspicion the OSCPA doesn't want this come hell nor high water. And that's fine. I respect your position, and I respect your desire to try and limit the competition and make sure that you have employment protection. But if that's the case, if you don't want to work on it, we'll come back and talk about this another day.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, we do not wish to limit competition. We do not wish to keep this very local. 310 players in this market is quite a few. It's really quite a few. It's not a major stumbling block to getting into the municipal auditing area. What we do wish is that the individuals that conduct municipal audits in Oregon are competent, and in some way that's verifiable. And right now the municipal roster situation offers some verification of that. We also believe, too, you know, if there's some change, let's go to what the national standard is. Let's go to government auditing standards as a standard, and they require actually more continuing education for being in that business. There is actually none that's up front with their standards, but be that as it may, that's what it is.
Well, let me ask you this. If we were to do what I suggested, would that satisfy the concerns that that the organization has, but at the same time satisfy the concerns that Representative Butler has? And I think I'm sort of trying to see if there's a way to split the baby here, and that may be the best way to do it, if that's amenable to Representative Butler. And if that's the case, I can just ask staff to talk to LC, make those two amendments, and we can bring this back on Thursday, and then it's off and running, and we take care of your of the issue.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, may I clarify that? That would be changing the may to shall, and
yes,
Asserting in some place that.
And then ask the Legislative Council to find a place in here insert the terminology about the government. Is it Government Audit Standards Board?
Government Auditing Standards.
The Government Auditing Standards, but isn't it GASB that?
No, it's done by the GAO, Government Accountability Office now.
Okay.
It used to be General
Standards. So Government Auditing Standards. Okay. If that's amenable to you, and
I'd like to ask Carol from the board the board may require each holder versus shall require each holder, if that's a stumbling block, do you think, Carol?
Thank you, Representative. And Mr. Chair, I would prefer that it remain may. If we can be more informed about the government auditing standards requirements, and the folks are required to meet those, then, as Perry says, we would not be having to monitor the hours that are being given unless we do the 24-hour immediate initial competency requirement. But I would rather have the word may in the statute without any indication that the board would not do so. I know they would not fail to require some competency requirements, but may just allow some flexibility in what they do.
So, Mr. Chair, that leaves us then with the issue of the issue of standards from the GAO for the GASB competency, and we just have to work with Legislative Council to find a spot for that if we can do that.
Can I ask Legislative Counselor to ask staff to bring that to Legislative Council's attention, and then they can call you if they have questions about that?
And I can work with Rob and or the Board of Accountancy to see what we can smith out, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Does that... you're going to give up a shell for a, for a GASB?
I'm not sure we're giving up anything there. I think that would be just fine.
Okay.
I believe the Oregon Society would be happy with that.
Okay. What I'm going to do is ask staff to please work with Legislative Council and also let them know that they can rely on both Mr. Douglas and Representative Butler as far as where General Auditing Standards language should go in that bill. And then, members, we will look forward to bringing this back on Thursday for hopefully a very quick resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you for being here this morning. I appreciate it. And so with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2166, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2236. And, Jim, if you would give us a little rundown on this one, please.
Yes, sir. House Bill 2236, it requires the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to adopt rules concerning property or leasing rates charged by state agencies that rent or lease property or facilities to other state agencies. The measure also requires DAS to review rates biennially and report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Ways and Means before January 1st of each odd-numbered year. We have a -1 amendment that adds the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Transportation to this bill. those amendments in the original bill was faxed to Veterans Affairs and the Department of Transportation. It does not have a subsequent referral.
Okay, it does not have a subsequent referral.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the Dash 1 amendment. It appears that basically it gut and stuffs the entire bill with this expanded information to add the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Transportation to the bill. Is that?
That's basically correct. Yes. The way the bill was originally set was it just pertained to the Department of Administrative Services. By adding the Department of Veterans Affairs and Department of Transportation, what we're doing is the three agencies that are most likely to have properties that they would be leasing or renting to other. To other agencies, it pulls them all under the same umbrella in that respect.
And the Veterans Affairs has significant rental property, Mr. Chair?
I do know that they have property here on the mall. I don't know if they have property outside of the mall. And Jim, do you know if they have property outside the mall?
No, sir. I was hoping Mr. Willis was going to be here to describe it, but he's not here.
He's not here. Okay.
Division State Lines and Victor Dance.
Bill, do you want to say anything about this? No? Okay. You're just kind of here to watch? Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Representative Dinko.
For clarification. So, the Department of Veteran Affairs and ODOT, they do not... ODOT's in here. So, they don't coordinate the rental properties through... DAS.
No, they don't.
But DAS covers all the other agencies. Yes. For instance, the Division of State Lands, I know, owns their own building and leases out to other agencies. And is that done through DAS as well?
I don't know. Bill, you want to come up and...
I'm just curious if this is just particular to these two agencies or there other agencies. I'm fine with the bill. I have no... issues, but it's more for clarification.
Yeah, my understanding is that these are the three agencies that actually, as a practice, may lease to other agencies, and so, and for the record, too, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Foster. I'm the administrator of the Facilities Division of the Department of Administrative Services. I think we tried to provide you previously a listing of some of these agencies. This was not totally exhaustive. The case of state lands, yes, they do lease to other state agencies. However, they have been utilizing the same rate as uniform rent rate.
Oh, okay. So they pretty much turned to DAS for direction on what the rate should be.
Mr. Chairman, they have... utilized us for handling their building, maintenance, and other aspects of it. So while it is an investment of the Common School Fund, it is something that we help work with them on.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious. Thank you. Since there is no language in here, that I'm just wondering if, and not to muddy up the waters here, but adding language about DAS consulting with other agencies that do own property to make sure that's happening. I mean, it sounds like it's happening already. I'm just wondering if we want to codify that and put that in statute to be consistent with, then, you know, or having something that just covers any agencies that do lease their own buildings, having DAS consult with them.
Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, we had proposed a couple different solutions to Legislative Council on this. One of those solutions was just to generically say for other state agencies leasing state-owned space, and it covered everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this could be structured in other ways, certainly.
Well, my only concern, Mr. Chair, is that
Yes. It's
like we're identifying only two agencies, yet there are others out there. So if we really want this bill to be comprehensive, and my concern is I just want to make sure, as you know, we had this discussion yesterday, Division of State Land, that's money that could be going to the Common School Fund, so making sure they are charging the market rate. And it sounds like they're doing that, but why not include all the agencies or have some type of umbrella function for DAS to consult with other agencies, just to make it more comprehensive.
Okay. I appreciate that suggestion. Any other comments around Representative Dingfelder's suggestion, or?
I don't know if the timing would work to have.
Well, we can do the same thing that we just did with the last bill. We can have Jim request legislative counsel to add that into the amendment, so that to do another amendment to add that language in, and then bring it back on Thursday.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rosenbaum,
I think that would be fine with me, and I think also I would appreciate making sure that ODOT and Department of Veterans Affairs have, maybe they have already looked at this language.
Yes.
And signed off.
Yes, we. Jim has been keeping them abreast of what we've been doing with the language. So. Well, if that's and also, Bill, I'll, you know, Jim can suggest the legislative council that if there's a question about that, to call you, and also Representative Dean Felder, if you don't mind, legislative council calling you if there's a question about what you're driving at here, then that would be fine.
So really, what you're doing, Mr. Chair, is you're just really tightening the net of the oversight that DAS has relative to this kind of consultation on rental properties.
Yes,
thank you.
Is that is that amenable to our members here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see heads nodding, so that's a good sign. Okay, Jim, I'll ask you to go ahead and do that then, and go from there. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2236. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3028. Members, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is that you'll remember. Jim, go ahead and give us a little. Rundown on this.
Yes, sir. House Bill 3028. Last year, this bill on April 12th directs the governor to establish a citizen suggestion incentive plan, directs the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to determine the savings attributable to implemented suggestions during a 12-month period immediately following implementation. Requires that the Department of Administrative Services pay to the person that filed the suggestion 10% of the amount so determined from monies appropriated for that purpose. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and at your direction, Mr. Chair, I attached Dean's testimony, our written testimony that he supplied us back in April to your staff major summary.
Yes, thank you. So here's what I wanted to do. I just kind of wanted to see if we could have a little bit of an open conversation about this, and that is to see if there are concepts in here that members thought were good. And does the bill sort of need a some work as far as amendments are concerned? And if there are suggestions for that, then what we could do is have staff work with legislative council to see if we can work up some amendments for the bill and for Thursday. Now, Mr. Schoenheit had suggested that there were some tweaks and changes that could be done to the bill, and I think that a couple of them were I'm trying to remember exactly where, but what I wanted to ask you is you know, from a standpoint of the concepts that are in here, and is this something that we as a committee think we ought to pursue?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler,
certainly the purpose and the goal is laudable. That is to have employees within all levels of state government identify areas where we can work more efficiently, more effectively, and to make government more accountable, leaner and meaner and cleaner, if you will. I'm just anxious about how to implement it, and I know on the, and then we got to look at Representative Brown, because he's got a couple of private businesses that are very successful, and I'm sure that his employees have a suggestion box somewhere in the organization
It's called the bottom line.
The bottom line, yeah.
It's the citizens. We already have an employee suggestion program.
Yeah, we do have an employee suggestion program that DAS administers.
Separate. This is citizens submitting to the governor's office, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, and the way I read this here, it's not just employees of state government. It's anyone within the state, and it really don't. The bill don't really define very well just exactly who that could be. I don't think. And then it says 10%, and that could be a sizable sum, I would think, in some cases.
I think that's why it's going to Ways and Means.
Yeah, it probably is why it's going to Ways and Means. So define who could participate.
Well, then the other question I had, Mr. Chair, was instead of setting up a separate bureaucracy, which this is the concern that I had. I mean, I totally agree with Representative Butler that the goals are laudable. The concern I had in reading this bill was that my understanding, I mean, besides having an FTE, it sets up a whole separate bureaucracy, and if there's any way to piggyback on the employee suggestion program and either have it feed into the employee suggestion program, because there's the infrastructure already set up for that, or to have the suggestions go through a senator or a representative, and then as elected officials we would then submit that onto the program. I mean, that was my main concern, is looking at the potential fiscal impact.
Okay.
And setting up, I mean, this entails hiring a new FTE through the governor's office. And the other thing is, I'd like to hear from the governor's office what they think about this idea, because they're the ones who can implement it.
Okay. So implementation is a big issue, I think, too. Okay. One of the other issues that I was sort of reminded of is the logistics of it, from a standpoint of, for example, when the payment to the citizen would be made. What's the standard as far as the amount that needs to be saved, or do we need to set an amount? I mean, of course, if you're going to save $1, but if you're going to save, mm-hmm. $10 million, then all of a sudden that's a little different ballgame. So there's nothing set in that respect.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Thanks. I share a lot of the comments that have been made. I think the fiscal is certainly the biggest concern that I have, that 10% of savings over the first 12 months could be a pretty whopping amount. And I would like to see, if this goes forward, some sort of non-monetary recognition. I would think that, some sort of public recognition might be sufficient rather than monetary, which suggests maybe something more along the lines of the Smart Buy program, which I'm not convinced is really free of conflict of interest in itself. And so I don't want to see, a
sure.
vendor trying to work through a private citizen. The one other thing I noticed in here is that there's a provision in Section 2, parentheses 3, that to submit these suggestions, you cannot ever have been an employee of state government. And I have a feeling that probably would let out about half the population mm-hmm. of the state. When you think about what a big employer the state is, and over the life of all of our careers in Oregon, probably, maybe it's the majority of citizens have at some point, had a summer job or done something that might qualify them as a state employee. So that's a, I'm not sure we want to let all those people be okay. disqualified from this.
So what you're saying, what you're pointing out is that none of us could participate.
Well, I think that would be legitimate. But
well, and Mr. Yeah. Chair, I think that Representative Rosenbaum raises a good point. And from talking to, I talk to state employees all the time, as many as us do, and I think they're often the ones who, even if they're no longer employed, know the system the best and mm-hmm. have the best suggestions, because they work on the ground day to day and closest to the issues. So I think I was concerned about that exemption or prohibition in the bill as well.
Okay.
So just a few minor things.
that's why I wanted to bring this out, because what I'm sort of hearing is that there are that the idea is not completely, is not without merit, but that there are some things that really need to be sort of worked out with it, and both from a logistics standpoint as well as from a language standpoint. And maybe this is an idea that what we really ought to do is maybe it's an idea that we need to let percolate a little bit, and also see if there's some interest. Maybe you know, one of the interim committees, for example, you know, maybe the if there's an interim committee on general government or on operations and oversight, like there was last interim, maybe seeing if they would be interested in sort of taking up this idea and refining it, and then seeing about kind of bringing it back next session with a little bit more of a refined you know, with some refined ideas. Does that sound?
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Rosenbaum, or Representative Rosenbaum, the other good representative that's on the committee amongst the other gender, Representative Dinkfelder, and I might have a gut and stuff for this, to have us come back and examine the oversight of the tax expenditures booklet, too. So that's something that we've been looking for a vehicle to try and figure out how we could come back in the interim and look at the socioeconomic benefits of the various of some of the credits and or deductions that are afforded on Oregon's overall income taxes right now, and while it may not have exactly the right relating clause. I think there are a lot of good ideas that the state is presently working on. I thought this was interesting, that the proposed award here would be income tax rate free, which would create yet another expenditure in the tax expenditure book. So,
Well, if you can get legislative counsel to get that into this relating clause and relating to suggestion incentives,
we can be pretty creative when we put our minds together. We'll work on it.
But Mr. Chair, I guess my thought is that if there were an opportunity to work on this and other issues that we incent in the state of Oregon to try and that's what these are. An incentive to come to Oregon, bring your business to Oregon for this credit or for that deduction is a valuable place to look at what it is that we do in the state of Oregon, and these are incentives. Now, I realize the original intent and purpose and projected reason for this bill was to discuss the potential for finding savings within and incenting those savings within various levels of bureaucracy in the state of Oregon. I think that's still a very laudable purpose. My concern is that it has a rather significant fiscal, or it has the potential of some additional, they need some amendments so that the folks who are closest to the ground might be able to be the ones that would submit those suggestions. But I would say this, Mr. Chair, if you're serious about cutting Representative Dinkfelder loose with the challenge, she could probably come back. And we're not attempting to cut any tax expenditures as much as we are to try and place the actual measurements and the outcomes of what it is that we're trying to accomplish, and then measure to see that we are accomplishing what it is that we're trying to incent, both economically and socially in the state of Oregon. The only reason that the state of Oregon offers the deduction for the property tax or the interest on your personal residence is to try and incentivize people to own personal residences and to become, and Oregon's done a fairly poor job of that. I mean, when you look, what were we, I think, in this committee, we talked about the fact that we're number 42 of the 50 states in terms of private home ownership. It's very low. And maybe it's time for us to examine some of those things and say, wait a minute, what is it that other states are doing that Oregon could adopt to make us, you know, in the top half rather than the bottom half of home ownership?
I would submit, Representative, that under this bill that you would be entitled to 10% of all you get along with.
Let's do this. Since anything that we are not completed can potentially be carried over to, or can be carried over to May 5th, if Representative Dingfelder does come in with some ideas that fit into this, then most definitely we could take it up again on Thursday. I think though that I would request that if any of us decide that we want to make any major amendments or change the scope of the bill, still fitting within the relating clause, to go and talk with the at least the chief sponsor of the bill and about any of those kinds of changes. But I'm inclined to say that I think this is an idea that needs to percolate a little bit, and there's some things that need to be refined about it, and with the amount of time that we have to work on House bills remaining in this session, it's probably not going to move here, but I would certainly encourage one of the interim committees to take up the idea and see if there's a way of refining it and bringing back a legislative concept next session. So with that, if there's no objection, I will close the public hearing, or excuse me, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3028, and we don't have anything else before us, and we have 4 minutes to get to the floor. So with that, we will stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.